Hosting Hat Tip.
You know how we're always on the hunt for awesome pieces for our short-term rentals?
Well, we're going to let you in on our secret weapon. It is Manoan. They have steep discounts on over 100 top brands. Think Wayfair, Article, West Elm, Crate & Barrel, Pollywood, Parachute, Velo. The list goes on and on. But these discounts are for hosts and designers for hosts only.
I had my eye on this awesome coffee table from Wayfair, wanting to give our listing that wow factor, but you know us. We are all about having our numbers dialed in and staying budget friendly.
And that's where Manoan stepped in with an awesome discount. And here's the kicker. Becoming a member is totally free. Yes, I said free. F-R-E-E. No cost to join. No monthly membership. It is completely free. But these discounts are exclusive. You do have to be a host or a designer for hosts.
Once you're a member, all you have to do is head to their site, install their browser extension, which makes shopping so, so simple, and purchase and fill your shopping cart in just a few clicks. And it's not just furniture and decor. Restock your most used items anytime you need to refill your supply area.
Exactly. And the best part, again, no catch. There's no fees, nada. Just major discounts waiting for you. Being a Manoan member is like being a VIP host without breaking the bank.
So head on over to manoanexperience.com. That's M-I-N-O-A-N experience.com, or just simply click the link in our show notes and sign up and let the savings begin.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hello, welcome back to another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. And let's start this episode like we do each and every week, and that is sharing one of you, our incredible listeners, who heads on over to strshare.com, shares everything they can about their short-term rentals so we can celebrate you here on the podcast and on our Instagram account each and every Sunday. Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week, we are sharing at Edenwood, NC. Again, that's at Edenwood, NC, E-D-E-N, Wood, NC. And she just so happens to be our amazing guest on the show. But I want to highlight a few things in her account. Number one, Catherine has and her husband have two properties, but on the same piece of land. And I love, they're both unique, but they've combined it into just one Instagram handle. So they've done a really great job of having two independent properties, but making sure to highlight both of them in their feed. The other thing I want to give a shout out here, she has a lot, her pictures are awesome. She has a lot of reels and a lot of carousels, so check that out. And she has some unique features, and you're going to hear about them on the show, but she does a really wonderful job of highlighting two of them, which is her loft that has a bathtub. That's just the bathtub. I think she said it's 150 gallons, and you'll see it throughout her feed, and it is a showstopper. And then also her wood-fired hot tub. So each property kind of has this like very unique bathing, you know, water experience. And so I think she just does a really good job of showing that on her Instagram also. But give them a follow today, please, as a thank you for her time for the show. And then check out her Instagram because it really is, she's done a great job. And there's a lot of moments here where she has guest, and you'll kind of see how it feels like, I'm going to say more like magazine moments where she has people enjoying the space and she's using those throughout her feed. Well done.
All right. And we're going to talk more about Catherine. So Catherine Morris is the owner and operator of Edenwood, North Carolina properties. She's got The Barn and The Treehouse. And I love the simplicity of those names. And Catherine is a superhost, and now she's been hosting full-time for over 3 years. So you'll hear in our conversation, this is what she does full-time. She cleans them. She inspects them. When something goes awry, she's the general contractor piecing together whoever needs to come together to fix the things.
Her husband.
Her husband helps her with the hot tubs, and so she talks about that. But she left corporate America to do hosting full-time. So I know there's a lot of you out there interested in that. And she even was kind of ashamed that she cleans. And it's like, I'm not ashamed, but she's like, I'm breaking the rules. And it's like, no, like, you know that was part of the plan and you enjoy doing that. And it's part of your full-time job. We applaud that. And so Catherine is really an incredible host. And she had to navigate the intricacies of operating a short-term rental in the aftermath of a natural disaster. And so that's what today's episode is mostly about, is Catherine navigating Helene and impacting her community when it wasn't, they're not used to getting these sorts of hurricanes, these sorts of storms. And so she really didn't have a buttoned up system in place. So now she's put one in place and she's sharing with all of you everything she's learned now on the other side of Hurricane Helene and how we can all better prepare ourselves for unprecedented storms and just being prepared for something that we might not see coming. Catherine, let's get into it. Tell us how you got into hosting, because you have an interesting story there, how you pivoted, and then take us into the fateful day when everything kind of was uprooted, if you will.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. And I'll start with how I became a host. Really, it was a pandemic pivot where once I got into late 2020, realized that, actually, I would go back and say mid 2020, realized that some of the implications that we were seeing, especially with my son, who was in elementary school at the time, but the implications with schools closing down and all the learning loss. I was still working corporately at the time. And so I was on Zoom 24/7, it felt like, and trying to keep the wheels turning with my job. And also all of school was online. And I knew that it was not going to cut it for the long haul. And also that there was going to have to be some significant intervention on my part to help with the recovery that was going to be necessary for everyone. And all of us had people and loved ones that we were surrounded by at the time that needed a lot of help. And so we live outside of Asheville, North Carolina, in the lovely mountains. And my husband said, hey, let's look into doing a vacation rental. And we had talked about it in the past, about doing one in our basement, and I was adamant that I was not going to have people in my basement. And so we began looking at property to hopefully pivot me out of the workplace so that I could be more present. And we ended up finding 6 acres on the very mountain on which we live and acquired it from an estate before it went on the market, a property that we had run by, walked by for many, many years, and that was kind of hidden behind a large amount of fencing. And so we acquired that property and began the work of building 2 unique short-term vacation rentals in late 2020, and then opened the first in 2021, almost a year later, and then the second in spring of 2022.
When you say unique, what does unique? And I love it too. You're not just going to do one. Why not just do 2?
Exactly. So when I say unique, they are both custom build and designed, and each have features that I guess maybe it's not unique to short-term rentals, but certainly to our area. So one of our properties called the Barn at Edenwood has a loft with 150-gallon tub that is completely perched in the loft, and the whole loft is dedicated to that tub. So not an extra bedroom, but a tub. And then our treehouse, we have it faces Mount Pisgah, and has a cedar wood-fired hot tub. Mm-hmm. But both were custom designed and built specifically to be short-term rentals. So they are not single-family homes.
Love that. And then you said you've walk and run by it. So how close is it to your primary residence?
So we can't see the properties, okay, which was intentional. I didn't want to constantly be worrying about guests or guests worrying about the property owner being close by. So that was intentional on our part. But I can walk to the properties and be there within about a 6-minute walk, or I can drive there and be there pretty quickly. So,
and you shared with us too before we hit record that you're all involved, right? You're cleaning, you're inspecting, you're messaging guests. It is your job, correct, for both properties. Can you talk to our listeners about that experience? Because we'll be candid that Catherine came on and was like, I don't follow your rules and I do all the cleaning myself. And we wanted to be really clear, like, no, like if that is the plan, if that is part of the plan for you to get paid to clean, to the cleaning fee and your messaging guests, and it is your full-time gig, we love that. So absolutely. How has that been going? How has that pivot been going for you from working corporate?
Well, that's a great question. My body is more tired than it ever was. I don't wear high heels. Sometimes I really miss the fun clothes I got to wear. Now I'm heavily invested in athleisure. Yeah. And comfortable shoes. And I have two closets full of clothes that I rarely wear anymore. Still can't part with them. But it's been interesting. So essentially, we do have some things that we outsource, but those are not the guest-centric heavy tasks that guests will experience. So I chose to keep the cleaning and the property readiness and guest communication, those things that are very high touch for the guest. I chose to keep those in-house. And we only have two, and that's intentional. I'm not wanting to scale. So that's part of, if we were wanting to scale, then that would be a totally different story.
That too. Here's my question. Do you do back-to-back same-day turns on both properties?
Yes.
And is it just you?
It is just me with the help of my husband, who has a full-time job, but he will clean the hot tub and the fire pit.
Holy smokes. So yeah. That's a lot of, so if you, on a day where you have back-to-backs, both have to be turned, what take us through like how many hours of work that is. Are you there right when the guest checks out, just getting after it?
For the most part, with maybe a 15 to 30 minute margin right there, but it's about a 4.5 hour just hardcore cleaning job between the two. Mm-hmm. So and I do suffer from a little bit of perfectionism from my former life as an accountant, so does make it more challenging, but we are heavy on the cleaning side.
Before we dig into the real meat of the episode here, I do want to know, what is your one secret tip for hosts out there that do clean that, like, once you figured it out, you felt like you unlocked the secret to cleaning back-to-backs in the same day?
Well, I had to purchase Roombas for both properties.
Okay, I love that.
Do you let that run while you're cleaning?
Yes. While I'm cleaning, and also huge fan of the Bona. And so those are the two things, but the Roomba was essential because I could not be carrying around a vacuum and doing a whole separate process. But I'm a real stickler about baseboard.
Same, girl.
See dust or debris on a baseboard.
No.
And so that's part of the 4.5 hours. And like our treehouse, which is, you have to walk down a 3-minute trail through the woods, and there's a lot of, and obviously the wood-fired hot tub and the fire pits. And so there's a lot of debris that folks are going to track in and out as a result. So those baseboards are cleaned every single time.
Jeez.
I have one more selfish question. maybe two, but definitely one. Annette and I are going to purchase wood-fired hot tubs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you like them? Do you recommend them? What? Give us the 411.
Okay, so I've only had one other host reach out and ask me this question, and I was honest because I believe in helping our community.
Yes.
So if didn't have my husband, who has somewhat of a flexible schedule and can work his schedule mostly around cleaning out the hot tub, I couldn't do it. So one of the things about a wood-fired hot tub, that not only do you have the hot tub that you have to take care of itself, you have the wood-burning stove that heats the hot tub. That stove has to be cleaned out after about two uses, because the fire won't continue to burn efficiently. And so that is a lot of heavy duty work, and it is truly dirty work, like soot, ash, and then the smokestack has to be cleaned out fairly regularly. Then also, we, specifically my husband, does a lot of work to set guests up for success. So sometimes in the dead of winter, and especially if you don't have back-to-back guest usage, if the hot tub is at 60 degrees, that's going to be about 4.5 to 5 hours to heat it up. And so what we do is we set up the kindling, and we get the stove ready for the guests to start the fire, which starting a fire is different from feeding a fire. And then, of course, it's sourcing all the wood, and certain wood burns better than others and more efficiently. So you can see it's a lot of details, and guests love it. They come for that experience. They have to be dedicated to the experience. And so we're very transparent, but it is easy to maintain.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever maintained a regular hot tub?
No.
So, yeah, I think they're...
It's just like choose your heart.
Different beast, yeah.
Yeah, it's like choose your heart.
Interesting. Okay. I like that perspective, because I'm always... another thing about accountants is that we're like worst case scenario people. So in my worst case scenario, I'm like, oh my gosh, if something happened to my husband, like that thing is going to have to be converted to electric, no more wood burning, like...
But it would come with its own source of issues,
that's
too.
Interesting. And I haven't thought about that.
Absolutely. And I'm going for, you're like, guess that they come for that experience. I'm like, I wonder how many people will come for that experience, but then just not participate in the experience once they see.
It does happen. Mm-hmm. Or some folks, they don't realize, like, you can't just throw a log on the fire and it's going to heat up. You have to continue feeding it about every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's really like what I would call a stay and play experience. Like you can multitask. You can be cooking over our wood-fired fire pit, the Brio fire pit. Sorry, this was the 4:45 a.m. waking up worrying about all the different things going on at the property. But you can cook your dinner over the fire. You can read in the hammock. You can do different things while you're heating up the hot tub, but you're going to have to stay there and do it. And sometimes folks don't realize that, even though we send a video, we communicate, like it's going to take time. So yeah, so we'll find the fire has started, but we can tell that
they got tired of waiting for it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we do a lot to help our guests be successful. And I've definitely gone up at the property at 10:30 at night to kind of help get a fire going, and so we do a lot to help our guests be successful.
I love that you're calling it our guest success.
I love that. Yeah, it's true.
Because it is true. They want to have that.
Because people will come for a rustic experience. I'm one of these people. And it sounds great and romantic and all those things. And then you get there and you see how much work is involved. And you're like,
there's a learning curve.
I could just sit inside and read, too. And that could be nice. All right, Catherine. Yeah. Let's get to the meat of this conversation, though. Yep. So talk to us about that fateful time where something happened at your property that you were not expecting. Take us through everything that happened, A to Z.
Okay, great. Well, I'm happy to be here. I wanted to share with... your community of hosts, and about our experience of hosting guests leading up to Helene, which was a combination of a hurricane, tropical storm, and flood that hit the mountains of Western North Carolina in late September of last year. And wanted to share our experience. And I thought that it would be a good opportunity to help other hosts prepare and just have a category for what happens when a natural disaster hits your area. I initially thought in the mountains that we were pretty safe and secure from most natural disasters, though obviously Helene proved me otherwise. And just hearing whether or not you want to talk about cause or effect, but certainly weather type events are increasing in normalcy in the States. And so I felt it would be important to share our experience about Helene and the natural disaster that happened in the Western North Carolina.
So when, and obviously you live there too. So when
yes.
you started to hear about it, because we chatted about it before we got started, you know, there are obviously so many places that encounter natural disasters each and every year, but you felt that you were a little bit insulated from, like we're saying, a hurricane, flooding, this type of natural disaster. When the chatter started happening that this might be coming your way, obviously as a resident and a host, what were the first initial thoughts that you and your husband, did you have guests? What was even the protocol? What were the thoughts going through your head?
Yeah. So late September, September and October are typically our best months of the entire year. And so we were looking to have a record October and we're fully booked pretty much all of September and October. And so we had guests at the properties and we were fully booked in the weeks following Helene. And really, I know it might be surprising. Everybody will probably recognize I have a bit of a Southern accent or maybe more than a bit, depending on where you're from. But we will pretty regularly when we have a snowstorm where it's going to be maybe 3 to 5 inches with really cold temperatures following, our area will actually declare a state of emergency because in a mountainous area where roads don't receive a lot of sun and some are more rural than others, it's really common. So that's always been my benchmark in dealing with guests in a snowstorm is, hey, like if our area is declared a state of emergency, then you have the opportunity to cancel penalty free because I don't want to be hosting or have. And sometimes people will say, hey, we've got 4-wheel drive. We're from the Midwest. We're used to driving in this. We're coming anyway. But because we live on the mountain, too, we have a pretty good understanding of what safety looks like at our properties as well as for our own selves. But a state of emergency is my initial bar. Also, in 2004, it was Hurricane Ivan came through these mountains, and we weren't living here at the time, but we were in Atlanta and remember the impact of Hurricane Ivan on this area. There was similar, though less catastrophic, flooding and wind damage. So most of us were predicting something similar to that, not what we had with Helene. So I was anticipating power outages and some wind damage, but not the catastrophic impacts we had with loss of infrastructure. So leading up, as soon as we started hearing the reports, I was reaching out to guests that were both staying with us as well as those that were going to be checking in that Friday, because I had guests that were scheduled to check in the Friday that the storm after the storm came through on the 27th. And so I was communicating to them, hey, like we've got a declared state of emergency. We're anticipating some power loss, potential wind damage. When there's a declared state of emergency, you can cancel. And so I was communicating with guests. I did have one guest chose to check out a day early and said, sure, that's great. Another guest who was in the treehouse chose to stay. And they were actually local, and one of them was a forester. So they were looking around saying, this forest is healthy. It's not going to be, I know that sounds crazy, but like we're in the mountains of Western North Carolina. And so they were like, this forest looks healthy. I think we will stay. And again, knowing, not anticipating how catastrophic it is going to be, I let them stay. And as the storm came through, which we had had a bunch of rain leading up to Helene. So really that whole week we had a ton of rain. But when the storm came through in the wee hours of the morning on September 27th, that's when a lot of the damage began to happen. And then as soon as, and we lost proper, or we lost power that morning. It was around maybe 5 a.m. on Friday morning. But as soon as the tropical storm, the hurricane passed, I was headed up, walking up to the properties to survey damage and to check on the guests. And it became very clear that there was not going to be a way off the mountain for quite some time because there were trees down on every major road on and off our mountain.
So do you beforehand, because Sarah and I are actually thinking about this for our property, of having like emergency like kits of water. So before that, for your family, were you going to the grocery store? Were you getting bottled water? Were you preparing that way? And do you have extras for, did you at the time have extras for your guest? And I don't know if that's changed since the storm to kind of have like a emergency kit like that of food and water.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually have lived on this mountain since 2010. And the longest power outage we ever had was a little bit more than 24 hours. So, and that include ice storms, snowstorms. So we never owned a generator because the cost benefit of having one when we've only lost power for more than 24 hours. So we did not anticipate, though I did go to the store and buy gallons of water and jugs of water and have some bottled water, just anticipating, we may be without power for 24, 48 hours. And so I'll get that both for us and our guests. So our precedent, even in the past, was that we had never lost power for very long.
So your home is fine. And then are you texting with the guest, the forester that's staying there? Or how is that interaction?
Yes.
And they're keeping you up to date on what's going on. But they have they have no power.
Right. And they didn't wake up till later. But that was my first concern, was making sure that they were okay. And also, I was prepared to make coffee. I don't know if this sounds crazy, but like guests need coffee when they wake up. So I was prepared. I had prepared meals, or at least bought some things for meals that I could do in a loss of power at our own house that I could also take up to the guests. So I had a soup recipe prepared and I had instant coffee and all those things. So I was trying to get food up to the guest and coffee, and the guest was supposed to check out that day, and obviously we could not get off the mountain. So the guest that was supposed to check out on Friday wasn't able to leave until that Sunday. So I was providing water and coffee, and they had a lot of food, and since we had fire pits that you could cook over, they actually were pretty self-sufficient because they had been there for a few days. But I still provided what I could, and I was really taking care of them while I was taking care of my own family.
Right. And but no power in your property or on that one.
Yes.
And at this point in time, there's like no way to get off the mountain. You're trying to figure out, and are you communicating with the next round of guests?
Yes.
Like, how is that? Because I know it's impacting the entire city. I mean, some people, obviously, we could go through on for hours of what was going on throughout. So what started happening, you forecasting? Is the mountain going to get cleared? Are people even going to come here? Were people actually reaching out to you proactively, seeing what was going on? I'm sure there were a lot of guests already starting to reach out if they were looking at the news and seeing what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I was focused on first the immediate guests that were going to check in that Friday. And because it was a weekend, it was Friday through Sunday, most of them. So those were my first priorities. And honestly, because of the loss of power and just the immediate sort of trying to deal with that, a lot of the news that people were seeing outside of Western North Carolina, we weren't necessarily seeing. And so it took a while. I think even I can't remember when I posted, like, oh yeah, like I think we'll be open in a couple of days. And that was just based on their down trees and on our mountain, and it's going to take some time to clean up. It really was hard for those of us that were in the actual, living in the actual disaster area, to see the news and really understand the full devastation that was going on. So seeing like the devastation in the Chimney Rock area or in the Marshall area, Swannanoa area, that took a while for those of us, at least from my perspective, to fully comprehend because we were so busy trying to deal with our own stuff. And I do want to say, like, I feel like I'm coming here in a position of just purely blessed because there was major catastrophic loss of life and homes and businesses. And I just had the minor inconvenience of loss of power and water. Mm-hmm. And so I just recognized so many people, and likely very many hosts in our area had it a lot worse and a lot harder. And some of them still likely haven't been able to reopen because there's just a few parts of Western North Carolina that are still trying to recover and get reopened. So I'm coming at this from a position mm-hmm. of like, man, we were really blessed. It took a while for it to sink in to for me that it was going to not just be days, but it was going to be weeks. And so then at a certain point, I realized, hey, like I'm going to have to not just communicate with guests in the immediate kind of next few days. Like I've got to start communicating with guests like that are booked really throughout the month. And so that was a significant turn.
And were you, because we've always, I'll just be honest, this nothing like this has happened to us. So we always ask the guest, you know, if there's an issue, like we want them to cancel because we don't want to be canceling all these guests. How are you handling mass cancellations? Were you asking them to cancel? Did you reach out to Airbnb? Were they all, first of all, were they all Airbnb guests? Are they all basically booking via the OTAs?
Yeah, that's so okay. This was a significant lesson learned for us. Right now, we are 100% Airbnb bookings and really looking towards moving to having direct. That's our next step. So right now, 100% Airbnb. And on the 27th, which is the day the storm came through, Airbnb at a certain point messaged hosts and said, we are going to allow all guests to cancel penalty free for your booking and bookings in the area through October 15th. So they selected, I'm not sure how they determined that date, but they selected a date that was over 2 weeks out.
Okay.
So that happened automatically, and I'm assuming our guests got that message as well. So this was one of the challenges is, and also somewhat of a help in the sense that Airbnb selected a date. So I had a benchmark to say Airbnb has selected this date of October 15th. So anybody can cancel. Now we actually were able to reopen on October 10th. And did have guests that had previously canceled through those dates. And so having that date that was selected did end up going beyond when we could have actually hosted guests. So some may view that as detrimental that we had some cancellations that we actually could have hosted, but that was the date Airbnb selected. So we had to honor that. I will say it was much easier when the guest reached out to Airbnb and said, I've received this message. I want to cancel, because then Airbnb would call me and say, this guest is canceled. If a guest reached out to me and said, I see I can cancel. I want to cancel. Then I had to reach out to Airbnb specifically and say, we're in the disaster area. This guest wants to cancel. They're allowed to cancel penalty free. Can you cancel on my behalf? Because if I canceled it, I still would have been penalized. And so it was almost like as a host, Airbnb didn't really have a flag over my name saying they can cancel penalty free. So it was an actual added extra step I had to go through during a really stressful time. So that was going on. Airbnb was allowing guests to cancel through a certain date. And also at the same time there, and this will get into this likely in a little bit, but our government authority issued a do not travel order. The first one I saw was on September 27th, which was consider all roads closed. Non-essential travel is not permitted. And so it was a do not travel advisory by the North Carolina Department of Transportation. And that continued on for our area. I believe it was finally lifted for Henderson County, which is our county, on October 8th.
Wow. And were you a part of, Catherine, were you a part of any, like, let's say, host Facebook groups during this time? Or are you friends with any other hosts that had guests that were stranded or trapped or also kind of similar situation than your guests? Were you communicating with any other hosts during this time?
So we live on the mountain where our properties are. We can't see them. But actually, in our small neighborhood, there are two other vacation rentals just on our street. And so our neighbors actually own one of them. And then another mountain neighbor's daughter owns the other. So I was actually around guests of the other two properties. And everybody was in the same boat. Everybody was stranded. And the first priority for all of us that had guests, which I think the majority of short-term rental hosts had guests like during Helene because it was such
peak
a peak
season.
Time.
Yeah.
Our first priority was getting people off the and just getting guests so they could, because there were major roadways closed. And so people couldn't even necessarily that Friday, they couldn't even get out of town to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really our first priority. And outside of that, I'm not active on Facebook. I follow your work really closely, but I'm not active within a host community.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was just winging it in a lot of ways.
No, but banding. You're kind of just like taking the next day. When you had this, obviously you had some lost income during this time. Is this something that you reached out to your short-term rental insurance about for lost income? How did you and your husband, obviously the property sounds like was fine. Were there any after effects of you having to fix the property at all? And then did you get any sort of lost income help from your insurance company?
Yeah, so we did have damage, though none of the damage was physical to either our property, the barn, or the treehouse. So we didn't have a tree fall on a property. There was minor damage that was fairly easy to repair. The major damage on our property was just downed trees, downed limbs. We have some fencing. We had broken fencing. We have string lights that line the 3-minute trail down to the treehouse. Trees fell on those string lights. So we had damage, though physical damage to the actual properties that would have prevented a guest from safely staying. Not that type of damage, but we had about 2 weeks of cleanup on our 6 acres that was necessary to both safely host guests as well as beautify the property. Your listeners, and something I've learned from the short-term rental community leading up to opening, was you've got to have business loss coverage. And so those of us that have that know how important it is, because vacation rental income, like for me, it's my full-time job. So that loss of 2 weeks of peak rental income, I knew was going to be significant. And so not only were we not able to reopen due to damage that we needed to clean up, we also didn't have the infrastructure, and there was a do not travel authority order. I thought, well, if any time that my business loss coverage is going to come into play, surely it's during one of the worst natural disasters in history. And due to a series of circumstances, we have two properties and we had two different insurers. So that was a unique experience, because not many people provide short-term vacation rental insurance, and we had each of our properties was insured by a different insurer. So I got to experience what it was like from a customer service perspective, to compare. And also, we obviously had two very different experiences. And one, so when we were applying for coverage, it really was mainly for business loss coverage. We had some minor damage that would have been covered, like to a septic cover, a door, a screen door. But mostly the significant loss was the loss of that 2 weeks of income of canceled reservations. And one insurer covered us under business loss with no problem, and the other denied our claim.
Interesting.
So, and to keep it as simple as possible for your listeners, because it is complex, under the civil authority, which is what we filed under, which was a civil magistrate order is saying do not travel. Mm-hmm. And so even if we had been able to reopen sooner, there was an authority out there saying essential travel only is advised through October 8th for Henderson County. So to open before then would have actually been going against a civil authority and also not very caring for our community, because really we needed the authorities dealing with, you know, helping in some really pretty catastrophic situations. So the best I can describe why we were denied by this particular insurer was that the civil authority part of our policy said that you could only claim a loss if the civil authority prohibited access to your property due to a covered loss. And because the civil authority said don't travel because of flooding, wind damage, lack of resources, like there was a whole bunch of things listed, because flooding was included in that, and we did not have flood insurance because we live at 2,600 feet on the top of a mountain, it was denied.
They find every reason.
That's rough.
Okay, so Catherine, so then now on the other side of it, did you change insurers? Are you sticking with it? Yeah.
We changed insurers.
Okay. Yeah. Did you go with the same insurance company that covered the other property? And why did you do two different, just to like see?
So the that particular insurer had actually, so we live in the mountains, and in the fall of 2023, we had a period of significant drought, and there was a wildfire on the other side of our county. So it was, we could smell the smoke, but you couldn't see it. But because there had been a wildfire in our county, that particular insurer dropped one of the two of our properties.
Okay.
So even though we had not had a wildfire risk, and at our particular property, they chose to drop the property that was embedded more in the woods. Mm. So now I look upon that as a blessing. We were actually dropped because the insurer that picked up our other property actually was the one that paid out our business loss coverage.
Oh, whoa. Are they a lot more expensive than the one that dropped you? No.
Cheaper.
What?
Yeah. And I went through line by line when I had to switch, and it was essentially the same policy.
Wow.
So it was honestly very surprising. And I'm not going to share publicly the insurer that did not provide the business loss coverage. I just don't believe in public disparagement. Mm-hmm. If your listeners want to reach out to me personally, I will share that. Mm-hmm. But this is a small community, but it was really surprising. And I also learned in the process, so I went to the FEMA Disaster Recovery Center, which if your area ever has a declared disaster, like they open up these disaster recovery centers, and I went and waited in line for multiple hours trying to deal with a claim. And through that, they have other vendors and people there resources. To help. And so I actually talked to our North Carolina Department of Insurance. They were there. And I said, hey, like, I'm really fearing I'm going to get my claim denied. And the gentleman said, look, your Department of Insurance is there to regulate the insurers. So you need to reach out to them if they have, if you have a denial of your claim. Mm. So I did. And in that process, I learned that actually the short-term rental, vacation rental policies that we all have is actually surplus insurance, and it's not regulated by a state insurer. Ooh. So when you need to get the help of a claim denial, in our situation, the only thing that the North Carolina Department of Insurance could do was send a letter to the insurer stating our complaint, but there was really no recourse. So that's just another, it's another thing that I thought was interesting, that our Department of Insurance, this is what we all have as surplus, so it's not going to be regulated by.
I have a question for you, Catherine, knowing that your past life as an accountant, having the experience you just had and knowing that it could be like one little detail about something that someone said of an authority to have the insurance company deny you. Are you restructuring your revenue in such a way that you have a little bit of a safety net? Did you already have that? Did you, have you changed any of your revenue allocations to help with a future disaster so you can, like, not self-insure, but just have some sort of safety net?
Well, we were in the fortunate position where we did have a safety net. Actually, a couple of years ago, I started following what they call the profit first method in terms of how we pay ourselves, and also to make sure that what we're retaining in the business is significant to cover losses. And we're also debt free on our properties. So that is something that.
Okay, let's pause there.
I will say too,
Catherine, there's a little debt free crumb she's laying out there.
I will say that as a business graduate and a former accounting major, it's not something, having healthy debt is still, I think, a very good thing. And having healthy debt to invest and reinvest in your business actually is a good thing. I'm also like one of the most risk averse people on the planet to
afford. Oh, so good. Hey, so, the debt-free during this time was probably a game changer.
Yes. So that was a weight that I did not have.
Again, let's pause though. See, we all do, like, you before you came on and said I'm breaking the rules, and then you said there's healthy debt. Listen, this is where everybody needs to, like, quiet the noise and what is best for you. And if no debt and doing the own cleaning, if that is your, like, place where you feel most confident and the way that you want to live, that is
Catherine.
That is, like, if someone else has higher risk and they want to have a team and they want to, like, leverage it all, like, that's where it's just like, hey, like, we're all just trying to do the best we can, but I like when people are doing the best for what they actually want, not what, you know, everyone else is chatting about. Another question really quick before we start to wrap up here, Catherine. Has this impacted, though, future guests? Are people, like, maybe not coming to the area because they're like, hey, it's not back up to speed. The infrastructure isn't there. What has the guest messaging and outreach been like? Or are there people wanting to just come stay to help the recovery? What is that after? Helene, what has that been like for you and hosting?
Well, I will say that all the things that you all teach your community, the things that are important, like returning guests and having systems in place and a branded effort and guest communication and customer service, all those things played a critical role during the immediate aftermath of the storm and continue to do so in terms of recovery. So, as I mentioned earlier, not only did I have to start communicating with guests that were coming within 2 weeks, but also I was reaching out to guests that had booked in December just to say, hey, like, we're reopening. Also, I feel like we are a part of a tourist ecosystem in Western North Carolina. And so what is not necessarily evident to everyone that doesn't live in Western North Carolina is that we live in Hendersonville. Hendersonville is a big agritourism hub in the fall. We're big apple country. So if you love Honeycrisp apple, you come to Hendersonville in August, September, October. And so the agritourism business was desperately needing to reopen because October is the biggest month. And so we felt we needed to play a part in of that reopening. We want our properties to be a hub that attracts people to our area and then feeds the local economy. And so that's the way we brand and view ourselves, as we're a destination in of itself, but there's so many other wonderful things to explore. And also, we were really fortunate to have quite a few returning guests booked for the end of October. And they were so gracious and wonderful. They weren't as concerned with, are there going to be downed trees, you know, on the sides of the rooms? And just that returning guest population was critical as we were trying to get back on our feet and to say, hey, like, we're still open. Our property looks the same. Restaurants are reopening. Our local orchards are reopening, and everyone's doing their best to reopen and be present during a really critical time for our economy. Recovery has been a little bit slower than we all had hoped. There's just when you make national news, there are impacts, and oftentimes folks may not understand that what happened in one part of Western North Carolina maybe didn't necessarily happen in the exact same way 45 to 50 minutes away. And so we're still viewed as one community. And I recognize that's just a challenge that this whole area is working really hard to overcome. So you see a lot of the local tourism boards and authorities doing part of the comeback advertising and really asking and saying, like, we're open, we're in the active effort of recovery, and we need guests here to as a part of the recovery.
So in summary, Catherine, having gone through it now at least, you know, one time with two properties, what would you share with the listeners who are wanting to prepare, they're wanting to do their best? What are some things you would advise them to do ahead of time and to prepare? What sort of system should they put in place?
I would say make sure that you can cover about a 2 weeks closure. Just have that nest egg, because that I can't say it was arbitrary. I'm sure Airbnb had an intent with how they selected that October 15th date, but that was a little bit more than 2 weeks after the disaster. So if you have, and I don't know what the experience was for other OTAs, I can't speak to that, but for us, that it would be, make sure you can cover 2 weeks with a loss of income at a minimum.
And I want to circle back to peak season, because 2 weeks is, if you know your numbers, 2 weeks is very different at different times of the year. And so for you, it was peak season.
Yes.
So the highest,
yes,
income 2 weeks of your year.
Yeah.
And compounded, if you have multiple properties in the same area, of like 2 weeks peak season, all your properties too. I'm just thinking,
yes,
of so many of our friends in this industry that if all of their properties were impacted for that long during peak season, it really is devastating for sure.
Yeah, it was a pretty significant loss. Mm-hmm. for just a 2 week closure. And then there has been the ongoing impact. So initially when we were looking at it, we thought, okay, probably through the end of March could be pretty tough. And April has typically been a really good month for us. But up until last week, April was looking worse than February. So now, I don't know if some of that was related to the wedding industry that may have been impacted. And of course, I've seen some other things. Obviously, there's different things going on economically and that as well. So it's hard to tell. But we will see. I think the big test for us will see what does October look like compared to what we were projecting last year to be. So what does a peak month look like? But we were down revenue-wise the first 3 months of the year, almost 18%.
Wow.
And so that it, so just being prepared that there's a longer term impact, and I'm sure that there's probably data out there related to other natural disasters, but this one being sort of a record breaker and being considered one of the worst in U.S. history, it's certainly been interesting to navigate it.
So to help out your Western North Carolina community, can you tell our listeners where they could connect with you, where they could go to book and help not only just the entire area out?
Yeah, so I would say anyone should come visit and stay in the area, and whether that's in a family vacation rental or one that hosts solo and couples like we do, come visit our area, stay, go out to eat, frequent shops. Our local businesses are especially in need. It's a trickle-down effect. So if we're down almost 18%, some of the stores and the restaurants, I heard at one point, were more like 30%.
Oh,
so so our area, wherever you visit, our area needs you. And I'm happy to point you to great different parts of Western North Carolina, including Hendersonville, where we are. You can message me and connect with me on Instagram, EdenwoodNC, or you can visit our website, which is EdenwoodNC.com.
Awesome. We'll put all of that information in the show notes. We hope you get a flurry of interest, Catherine, because you are such a great host, doing such good work. Talking to you before we hit the record button, this woman is detail-oriented when it comes to her cleans and her guest readiness, and we are here for every aspect of it.
I want to see those clean baseboards.
Oh, girl.
Sounds like we can eat off. We're gonna come to Western North Carolina. We're going to go pick apples, and we're going to set those apples on your baseboards because they are clean enough to eat off
of.
Love to have y'all. Yes. Awesome. Thanks for the work that you do. You're an inspiration. And when somehow I stumbled across you on Instagram, and I followed you all immediately because I could tell that you had a great energy and were doing really great work. So thank you.
Well, and I want to congratulate you and thank you and share with everyone listening that Catherine saw a gap in our content. And she's like, I think I have something that I can add to it and share with the host. So we welcome all of you hosts out there. If there is something you faced, if there is a unique situation that other hosts can learn from, that is what the Thanks for Visiting podcast is for. So, Catherine, thank you for reaching out to us. It's always so, we work very hard to bring content in, but when hosts say they want to bring a certain topic in, we are here for it. So thanks for doing that. It's really helpful. We can't do this without the listeners helping us create this world. And I just know that you're going to help so many of the hosts. So, Catherine, thank you so much. And with that, I am Sarah Caracan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for Visiting.
Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.